everyone. Welcome to Pockets, the podcast where my dear friend Fabian and I explore the pockets of movies and life.
Great. Hey, everybody. How are you? Hi, Jen.
It's great to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
The sun is shining. It's been a little, some foggy mornings. Like, basically, the first day of spring, the fog returned, yeah. Which, you know, I do. I love our foggy mornings. But hard to get out of bed.
This is normal, I think. We get the fog in the morning, yes, beautiful, yes. Sunny. Really, we can't complain. Come on.
Oh, I'm not No.
We're not complaining. Yeah. No, we are not
complaining. Anyone that knows me, I'm delighting that it's foggy. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
All right.
So, I saw... before I know we have our movie segment, and I kind of been doing this, but just one I want to bring up so I don't forget. I watched the documentary about Kurt Vonnegut the other night, and
I want to see it.
Oh, Fabian,
is he the most optimistic person, or am I wrong?
Most optimistic, but just yes, like especially that quote, like just if you just do art, it doesn't matter if it's good. Write a poem, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. More than that, though, like it was just fascinating. His life, his family life, just, I don't
Where
know.
Where was this on?
It might have been Max.
Okay, I got to see it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm fascinated
and
by him.
I'm so sorry, everyone. I should have noted the title of the documentary, but it's the Kurt Vonnegut documentary.
And you know that one.
That one. It's what was interesting about it was that the man worked on Curb Your Enthusiasm 25 years ago, 30 years ago. He said, Kurt, I want to do a documentary with you. And Kurt finally agreed. And here they're on the Hudson line from Grand Central going up to where he lived in New York, which he just took him, the documentary took 30 years to make.
Wow.
And the perspective of this man having his whole life, you know, Kurt wishing him a happy wedding and then his wife becoming ill. And then Kurt dying, and it was just, it's just, there's a side story that's super interesting.
Wow,
but
that sounds amazing.
So, anyway, I just had to start with that.
Wow.
It's been on my mind
today. So
it's
not just a regular documentary of somebody doing a story
about
someone.
Kurt Vonnegut,
he has a
right.
completely personal experience.
Yes, he
point
really
of view
does.
From it.
And
great.
Lovely messages from Kurt.
Oh
like,
my
and
God,
Kurt
that's
wasn't
great.
Wasn't shy of saying, I love you, and
right.
which I think is very important. Yeah. I love you.
Oh, I love you
I
too.
Love you. All right, so I think we don't have much banter. I know that, you know, we had a lovely weekend. St. Patrick's Day was nice. Peter and I went downtown, which was fun. We got pinched, which I didn't realize. I didn't realize why this girl was pinching Peter and then me.
A stranger?
A complete stranger pinched us. Then I come to find out if you don't
In
wear...
In this day and age?
On the arm.
Wow.
But
that's assault
I know.
In some places.
She was very pretty, so I think she's used to people not reacting, I guess, if she approaches them.
You were not wearing green?
I wasn't. We didn't think about it. I didn't think about it. We just ran downtown. And
I was, but it was accidental. Completely accidental.
Lucky.
It was lucky. I did not get pinched.
Oh my God. Yeah. Apparently a slap on the ass or a pinch is what happens if you're not wearing green. And that's literally, and I grew up out east and that was the first time that ever happened to me.
Wow.
Of course I was always wearing green.
Of course you were.
So,
plus I think of you in green. I think of you Kelly Green. To me, Kelly is
don't you know? Yes.
It is
something I should be wearing every day.
All the time.
I got my Irish passport, but what has not been returned to me is my American passport and all the paperwork that went with it.
Wait, but is the American passport a good passport?
Yes, hello. I had to send them my American passport.
Shit.
And they said within 15 days it should come back. Every day I go to the mailbox and I'm like, oh no. So
you know what? You don't get
crossed.
Both. You get one or the other. They've chosen for you.
No, exactly. What's weird is everything else has been what they said. Like you get it back in the timing that they say, but it's okay. It's going to be all right.
It'll be all right.
It's going to be all right.
It will.
Anyway, this is now the time, my friends, for the interesting stories from around the world. And I believe, Fabe, you are first up.
And I really hope people are not getting tired of me talking about AI, but this is a happy story a bit. About AI, and it is how AI is being used to assist in
medical
solving mysteries, medical
right,
mysteries.
Right.
Not just that, and a lot of things, but solving medical mysteries that people cannot figure out. This is a really great example. It's about a boy named Alex who had this chronic pain for 3 years. He's a child. He's 11 years old, I think. And ChatGPT provided the correct diagnosis, and it all happened when his mother, after visiting 17 specialists over the course of 3 years...
Which I can't even imagine.
I know.
That would be so
all
hard.
Who looked for a possible cause for his ailments, but no doctor or physician could alleviate her son's chronic pain. Then one day, She put in all of his information, the symptoms, his MRI data, all of it into ChatGPT, and the system spit out a diagnosis that medical professionals had not previously made. He had tethered cord syndrome, which sounds horrible. It's a childhood condition in which the spinal cord becomes tethered to its sheaths or surrounding tissue. The resulting traction on nerve fibers can cause headaches and other symptoms. Can you imagine? I mean, just no. Reading that is painful.
Horrifying. And yeah. Just the fact that, you know, you can picture her sitting on the couch entering this data at her wit's end.
Yeah.
And the miracle.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so scared of AI in a lot of ways, and you've helped me kind of embrace it a bit. And it's just fascinating that this could just...
Well, you know that I've helped you embrace it because I'm not really me anymore. I've been replaced
by a cyborg of AI.
I am an android of myself. It has my consciousness, though. So I will never die. I will never age. I will never die. This is me forever.
Oh, my God.
There are crazy people who might believe something like that, too.
That's true.
Anyway, she asked a specialist about this, and the AI was absolutely correct, and they Amazing. Did surgery, and they helped him. So that just, the whole story about this really got me thinking about what else it can do. And it has diagnosed rare diseases that people could not figure out. It has predicted disease outbreaks.
In what capacity do you know?
Because it analyzes data from various sources, like on social media, travel patterns, environmental data, and it can predict outbreaks of diseases like the flu, the Zika, Ebola, other types. And
allowing for quicker responses.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's going to change a lot of stuff.
It is going to change a lot of stuff. Deciphering the structures of viruses. AI has helped understand the structure of complex viruses. For example, well, I don't know. This sounds very complicated.
Well, no, let's go for it.
It has made significant breakthroughs in predicting the 3D structures of proteins, which is crucial for understanding diseases and developing vaccines.
We don't understand it, but for those who do, it's got to be a huge thing.
For sure. My favorite part, though, is this. You know, we keep seeing articles and reading about how antibiotics no longer work on humans because we've OD'd on them. They've been overprescribed. You have a scratch here, have antibiotic. You have a sore throat, take antibiotics.
My whole childhood, it was too much.
Yeah, so they don't work anymore.
Right.
AI has been able to discover new antibiotics.
Oh.
In a notable case, researchers used a machine learning model to identify a powerful new antibiotic compound called Halicin, which is effective against many antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Oh my gosh, Fabian, that is enormously...
And you know, we're only talking about what it can do and what it's solved medically.
Right.
Think about... And I'm sure it has, and I haven't heard about it yet or read about it yet, but with the climate change and it may come up with new energy sources, new ways that aren't going to...
Destroy Earth. I would love it. I heard recently on several occasions that in Australia there is no ozone layer, which I don't understand, but there apparently is no
ozone.
Any longer.
Wow.
So maybe it could help
restore
that. Isn't
that where it first started?
Was it Australia?
Was it in the 70s? It was in the southern hemisphere where there was a hole.
Yeah.
In the ozone layer. And now you're telling me there's no ozone at all. Wow.
That's what I've heard.
So imagine
that people
go
there and they don't know to put sunscreen on.
That's what I was
going to
say. Imagine
the
amount of cancer, skin cancer.
Yeah. No. Insane.
It's happening. Yeah. It's a lot.
And a lot of Australians are Irish. Descendants.
Wow, look at going back to it.
You know, that criminal colony and all.
Oh, yeah.
And the Brits sent
them
there.
They've got to have some Italians like me there, no?
We would hope for their skin, for God's sakes, because really,
For sure.
By
the way,
really interesting.
Speaking of, I am having myself another serving of the Grey Whale Gin. Right.
Looking for sponsors. Before we continue on this fascinating subject, the fact that AI can provide this analytical data and information so quickly and have the resources to do it. Just briefly, guys, I want to interject with, I was listening to my favorite podcast with Alan Alda called Clear and Vivid, and he was interviewing this lovely woman, a scientist who has a name. Unfortunately, I can't remember it.
Alda?
But,
I listen to him speak all day long. I love his voice.
I'm telling you, it's everything.
I had no idea. Go ahead.
Clear and Vivid with Alan Alda. It is life-changing. For those who, you know, were big MASH fans.
Oh my God, I love him. Not MASH.
No,
I loved him in...
Same time next year.
No, I loved... Oh, wait.
Plaza Suite.
The
Four Seasons.
The Four Seasons. But I also loved him in the Woody Allen movie.
Oh,
Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Manhattan Murder Mysteries.
No, was it Crimes and Misdemeanors?
Manhattan Murder Mysteries with Diane Keaton.
With Alan Alda. No, it's with Alan Alda where he plays he's like the big producer writer.
Oh no.
And if it doesn't make you laugh, it's not funny. Like he has all of these, he's a total pompous. And Woody Allen is his brother-in-law, and he's trying really hard to make a documentary.
Is it Hannah and Her Sisters?
I think it is.
Because Manhattan Murder Mysteries, Angela Houston. I love Houston, that one. I mean, love that one.
I love that. That was when Woody Allen was really on his prime.
I know.
Crimes and Misdemeanors, I think, was either right before or right after that, and it was good. My favorite.
Yes.
All-time favorite Woody Allen movie. Sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. I love that man.
Alan Alda.
Anyway, his wonderful guest, and I wish so much that I could remember her name. I'll try to pull it up while I'm speaking. She was explaining that for astronomy, the scientists were researching that, and they chose women to do the actual analytical data because they considered it secretarial work.
Astronomy, of course. It is astronomy.
The woman's name is Shohini Ghose, and she is a leading physicist herself. And she went on to explain that they hired them to do this work, considered them secretaries, paid them half price, and these women did the actual analytical science to figure all of that out.
That saved lives.
That saved lives.
There are stories, there's been movies made about
exactly.
this.
Exactly, yeah. And it was just amazing. Something I just thought was interesting to add. I mean, AI is wonderful, but before and she actually said they were referred to as the robots, like these women. So it's quite extraordinary. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And vivid. You'll learn a lot. That's what I love about it too, Fabian. I learned so much from his podcast.
That is really fascinating.
It really is. I'll send you the link to this
robots,
one in particular.
I can't believe they called them the robots.
I know. And that they priced them down and because they categorized what they were doing as
not
actual
only that,
scientific
no, but
work.
They were women. Even regardless if they could be doing the exact same job that men were doing, they'd still get paid half, especially back then.
Of course.
But you know, that raises questions about AI the same way when you say the robots and because they're the robots and they're getting paid less. The idea that AI can do all of this work and it's going to make our work, any kind of menial kind of work,
obsolete
or easier, facilitated,
yes.
And we're not paying them and we're not, there's a weird
I wonder if that'll become like an ethical.
Oh, are you kidding? There were lawyers, the one of the biggest law things I remember kids going into law was for ethics, for AI ethics.
Are you serious,
yeah,
Fabian?
For sure, yes. Because they're already predicting.
But they're not sentient creatures.
But they're going to be. They are sure of it. They are sure of it. They're sure of it. And I think it's going to happen a lot sooner than we think. According to some people, somebody who worked for Google, and I don't remember his name, and he says they are sentient already. But that they're keeping that from us. Of course, that could be any kind of stupid.
That reminds me of War Games. Do you remember War Games?
You know, I never saw that with Matthew Broderick.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that man that was the professor. I can't remember.
I never saw that. So how does that apply?
Well, the computer at the end says it's because the computer says that because there's going to be the nuclear war with Russia and the computer's going to do it.
Right.
And then they manage to stop it. Matthew Broderick, the teenager, manages to stop it. But, you know, in the end, there's no winners was what the computer says. And I'm butchering this because I've literally saw it like 45 years ago.
I got to tell you that the Bionic Woman beat them to the punch because she did a whole episode in 1978 or 79 with the same thing. And it was the same lesson. And she stops the whole nuclear war from happening.
Jamie,
of course. God, Jamie, I love you
Summers.
So much. I love her so
Team
much.
Team Jamie.
But that message was the same at the end. You know, the idea
that there's
there are no
winners.
Winners.
Yeah, and that's why it's frightening when you hear Putin talking about, you know, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Manhattan Project, was that also, was that just nuclear or was that?
Yeah, that was the Oppenheimer, right? Wasn't that?
Oh, that was more the Oppenheimer thing.
Right?
Okay.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
so.
Michael Douglas, Vanessa.
That's what the Manhattan Project was.
Oh, no, I thought
to.
Wasn't there a movie?
There was another one. Wait, that's before.
Manhattan? Woody Allen? No, I'm kidding.
No, Manhattan Project. It was. But the Manhattan Project is what the nuclear thing was.
You're right,
Fabian.
I forgot.
To
right.
I never saw this with Michael Douglas. You're thinking about. No, you're thinking, if it's Michael Douglas and Jane Fonda, you're thinking about the nuclear plant.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking about.
It's not the Manhattan Project, it's the nuclear plant.
Let me look.
In the 1970s?
Yes.
You know, how did I not? how it was inevitable that I was going to live with so much anxiety.
China syndrome.
China syndrome. But that I was gonna, live with.
None of us
so
stood a chance.
Do you remember the morning after?
At least we didn't
after?
Have to hide under
the
our
morning
desks.
After. Was it called?
Yes, Jason Robards.
The day after. The day. No,
day after. The day after.
The morning
day,
after. No. The one about
was, the Jason Robards was in it, right?
Wait, are you talking about
the nuclear?
Right, but there was one that was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
And then there was one that was Jane Alexander. Yeah. We talked about this last time.
I love Jane Alexander.
And she was married to Willem Devane. And they're on the phone. He's in San Francisco. They lose contact because a nuclear thing is struck. And she has to watch.
We talked about this last week.
I don't know. I talked about it to somebody. Okay. And they you have to watch her children slowly die from the contamination.
Oh, my God.
This movie fucked me.
Oh, Fabian.
Up.
That Russia, the Cold War,
oh my God,
AIDS,
it
we
was
were
the
so,
worst.
It was yeah, not we, a great time.
Jesus.
It wasn't a great
time. We think it's stressful now. It's never stopped being stressful.
It hasn't. And like my aunt and my parents, they had to hide under the desks in school. Mm-hmm. Like that would have been, you know, enough.
What was it? Duck and cover? What was it? Tuck and
like
cover?
Like that was going to save Rolling you, cover? By the way, from the nuclear
fallout. Oh, for, it will.
Fallout,
if you
right.
do it right. Jamie would do it right. Jamie Summers, she would totally do it right.
Oh my God. All right. So, antibiotic resistance, understanding genetic factors.
We got it. I think we're good.
You got it all?
I'm curious to see what you're going to talk about. With,
well, I
don't want any kind of anything that might have helped society, you know, any mechanical things that help society.
Exactly.
AI is just the ultimate, but I don't think it was one of the first. I think you were going to come up with a much more interesting story.
While I was going to continue the topic of AI, I decided to add a little spice to this conversation. And you're right, this is something that was invented to help women. In antiquity, women who had anxiety, mood swings, and depression were sent by their husbands to the doctor, who diagnosed them with a disease called hysteria. There's also a movie with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. She's great.
Maggie
I love her.
Gyllenhaal.
She seems complex. She seems like a complex human, but she's great. Go ahead.
She does seem complex. And she also said that she was kind of embarrassed because masturbation isn't something that is spoken about. Vibrators in specifically.
Yeah.
So she was kind of nervous. But anyway, I'm jumping ahead. Guys,
interesting.
The treatment for hysteria was based on pelvic massage. I think we all know where this is leading. With the purpose of achieving hysterical paroxysm, now known as orgasm. There were so many women who began to attend consultations to have their treatment for hysteria, in quotes, that doctors at the end of the workday were exhausted and their hands were shaky. That is why they decided to invent a useful device that produced rhythmic vibrations, and that hysterical paroxysm was achieved easier and faster in the patient without the need for manual massage.
This is crazy because there are doctors in the last, I don't know, 50 years have been arrested for doing things like this to their patients. Look at the gymnastics, the fucking gymnastics doctor with the gymnastics
yes,
girls team.
That's no laughing matter. That's
it is
terrible.
Not a laughing matter,
that's
but terrible. What I'm saying yes. is these guys were getting paid to do it and they
rolling up the sleeves and exhausted. Like the picture that I saw was like the 1800, 700 skirt, the billowing skirt, and she's got it hiked up and he's like sweating with his hand up her skirt.
Wow.
I know.
That is
and
insane.
You wonder, you just have to wonder, like, did they not realize it? I don't know. Anyway, guys, at the time it was seen as a healing artifact. Even the wealthiest women had them in their homes for when they felt bouts of hysteria. So for the next 20 years or so, the vibrator or massager, as it was known, enjoyed highly respectable popularity, advertised alongside other innocuous domestic appliances in the genteel pages
okay,
of magazines.
Okay, but wait a minute. If this is the case, doctors were making so much money because I can imagine so many women saying, I'm having a case of hysteria. I've got to go see
course,
the doctor. I've got to go see the doctor, especially if they got a bum, a dud of a husband.
Right.
So, I mean, that must have been the golden years for some people, men, women
sure.
and doctors.
I'm sure. And the doctor, for my thing, Womb with a View, that I did, I researched the American Medical Association removed the midwives from performing abortions because they wanted the money. So that's why they outlawed women from giving other women abortions.
Wow.
Way to go dark, Jen. But, but so I'm not a fan of the American Medical Association in those days.
Okay, but I'm already seeing a movie. I'm seeing a movie that we need to come up with.
Right.
Of a woman doctor who performs
masturbations.
Things for other women.
Yes.
That could be.
Well, there was a movie called Hysteria. I haven't seen it.
But was there a female doctor?
I don't remember.
Because that could be really fascinating.
We have to see if there even was a female doctor anywhere in those days. I'm not sure, Fabian.
Really?
I'm not sure of that.
In the movies, there's always that one.
Because what happened was the women, because they were outlawed, the women just helped each other.
Wow.
And there was a nickname for what they would do. It was a concoction they would drink to have the abortion.
Wow.
So amazing. But anyway, advertisements alongside other innocuous domestic appliances in the genteel pages of magazines such as Women's Home Companion began with slogans describing them as such delightful companions and promising all the pleasure of youth. This is hilarious. Will throb within you.
I think I had one of those dreams last night. I think all the pleasure of youth throbbed within me. It was crazy, but go ahead. Too much.
In 1909, Good Housekeeping published a tried and tested review of different models. While an advert in a 1906 issue of Women's Own assured readers it can be applied more rapidly, uniformly, and deeply than by hand, and for as long a period as may be desired. I know when I was exploring this very topic, I asked my sister.
Oh, thank God. You said topic. I was wondering what you were exploring.
Well, I asked my sister, so, you know, do I have to take off my underpants when I do this? You know, and my sister being so lovely, like, she laughed at me. She's like, you can leave your underpants on, Jen.
You can? Won't that be irritating?
You can, but they were soon off. But she did say to me at the time, she's like, you can leave your underpants on if you want, rolling her eyes at me. But she said, but I'll tell you one thing. You're going to have an orgasm that no man will ever be able to give you.
Wow.
And I'm not diminishing any men. There are wonderful lovers out there, I'm sure. But with that back massager, I was able, then by hand, and for as long a period as may be desired.
Sometimes it takes a minute.
Sometimes
the boys can be finished a little sooner, and then you're like, oh, you know, it was great. Thank you so much. It was great.
But interesting about that Kardashian that came out as, not asexual. She said, you can only pleasure yourself. You get pleasure only from yourself. I can't remember the word she used.
Huh. Interesting.
Don't follow them enough to know the whole story. But anyway, wrapping this up, not quite actually, because I do think it's interesting. Did women really not know what they were buying? Despite the lack of evidence to suggest otherwise, it seems unlikely. The manufacturers surely knew what they were selling. Some of the language of the early 20th century ads is heavy with unmistakable innuendo. One boasting of its wares, thrilling, invigorating, penetrating, revitalizing vibrations, guaranteed to create an irresistible desire in a woman to own one.
There's no way they obviously knew what they were doing.
They had to know.
But there had to be some kind of censorship or guideline that they had to use advertisers.
But maybe the first woman that went and had this manual stimulation from the doctor.
And word of mouth? Are you kidding?
Do you think that doctor thought he was sexually helping her? Or were they...
You know, but they didn't have an understanding. You have to think about how women were treated or considered. Not too different sometimes in some places of the world.
As
still.
Oxen.
But there is no pleasure. That's not, that's only meant for you to procreating, recreating.
Correct.
It's for procreating and it's for,
Fabian.
It doesn't matter what the woman wants. And this is just to, she's having a little,
but then once it's
having a flare up,
let's
figure this out. It has nothing to do with anything. They don't, you know what I mean? I think that was not considered. What the woman felt or wanted was
not
at all considered. I think it was one, a moneymaker. And two, it's just to keep them happy until the husband's ready to do something or whatever, I think.
It reemerged in the 1960s as a rather daring sex toy. But according to Cher Height's famous survey of sexual behavior in the 1970s, only 1% of women ever used it. This was perhaps unsurprising, I know, given that most vibrators by then were modeled on a very male notion of what women would want, a supersized phallus, which is actually what they don't want. I've read recently that women just want a regular size.
Right.
Replicating, in other words, the very anatomy whose shortcomings had precipitated the invention in the first place. Much of what we know now about the history of the vibrator comes from a small academic book by an American historian wonderfully entitled The Technology of Orgasm. Published in 1999, it is striking and rather telling that despite being such an interesting tale, no account of the vibrator's history had existed until then. Wow. 1999.
That's crazy.
In either academia or
pop
culture.
It's only 25 years.
Is that insane?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Anyway.
But you know what? You have to think about it. Even 25 years ago, the topic of that is something... There's things... Men's sexual activities or in movies, in print, in anything is not that... bizarre, and it's been around for a long time. But to talk about a woman's pleasure, you know, you think about D.H. Lawrence and you think about the French lieutenant's woman.
Absolutely.
It's something coming from that point of view, and it was shocking, and it was banned
and
in some
so
places.
Oppressive.
And banned.
Even
in
its writing.
Right.
Right.
I mean, there's something about not even acknowledging mm-hmm. a woman's need
Correct.
Or desire, because the acknowledgement that a woman might need something else is that the man is not good enough, that men are not, and it's a man's
or
world
that she
in a way,
wasn't even so, considered, right, yeah.
But that's why, and yeah. I mean, that it makes sense that there was nothing written about it, because
you're right.
In men's point of view, it's a sign of failure on their part, so why are they
of
going
course.
To advertise it or even
of
look
course.
At it? So.
And you're right, very present in the world today, a lot, you know, in large swaths of the earth, and I'm not going to get
yeah.
political or say where,
yeah.
but it is striking and fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's making me think of Poor Things, which I saw a couple of weeks ago. And
what'd you think?
I loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it. And that moment when she does her...
So
she,
free and open.
And she's just going at it. And she's like, what? This is great.
I know.
Can't wait to do it again.
It was fantastic.
It was excellent.
It really was. I agree.
Do you remember ever seeing
absolute
that?
Absolute freeness.
When was the last
person.
Time you saw that in a movie?
Never.
I can't remember
Never.
Seeing that in a movie before.
And what did she call having sex again? Are we going to rub bodies? Or?
Oh, she had many different
so
things.
So wonderful.
They were really great.
Mark Ruffalo.
He was great. He was so great. I want to rub bodies with him so badly. Seriously.
Same,
so
Fabian.
Much.
Same.
He's so cute.
He's fantastic.
He is.
So, in fact, that's so funny that you bring it up, because we're now in movie time, and I was going to bring up Emma Stone and Poor Things, because when she took the thing off the table, and I never really caught what it was, and she put it under her skirt at the table.
Yeah.
Her freeness yeah. in it. Because even now, like I said, even talking to you, what I mentioned about myself earlier, I was like, shut it down, my inside voice.
Yeah.
Because we're just
That's
so
how we're
conditioned.
Taught, for sure.
Exactly.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. You do not talk about that.
No.
For boys, it's a little bit easier, I think, because boys have a facility to talk about it even in junior high school, and you know what I mean? They can talk about these kinds of things.
Right.
Girls do not,
no.
they were not encouraged
no.
to talk about
I
it.
Mean, vibrators were simply not mentioned. And if they were, it was taboo. And
Oh,
you know,
no, it was a
yeah.
joke. It was always
it was
the
a
butt
joke.
Of a joke.
Exactly.
You know what's really interesting, and I don't mean this just me, I mean in general, that vibrators are also not just for women anymore. I mean, and not just for gay men. I mean, straight men. I know straight men who... enjoy them also while they're having sex with
yeah,
their partner
I,
because it really
yeah.
helps get, I mean, the prostate is a very powerful
right.
organ. So
yeah.
it's really, really common. And that's something that I'm waiting to find, you know, in the next Emma Stone movie.
Oh.
I want Mark Ruffalo doing that.
To be shocked when somebody pulls that out and lays
well,
it
you
against...
always see somebody in a movie where somebody gets shocked because they'll do the finger, they'll do something.
No, right.
But, you know,
no one thinks
just,
of the vibrator, and the vibrator is really effective.
It is. That's
yes,
all I'll
that's,
go.
Yeah.
That's as
because
far
we're
as I'll go.
We're both turning red. No, and our husbands would get mad. No, but getting back to the AI topic,
yes.
Peter will never listen to this. Don't
Neither
worry.
Will Dave. We're good. We are good.
Which I love that our husbands, who love and support us,
yeah.
will never listen
as
to this
long
podcast.
As our friends don't talk about it.
Exactly. Say nothing. So with the AI topic, you wanted to mention her. I didn't see it. Not a big fan. Do
of
I
whom?
Need to get on board?
Of whom?
Phoenix.
Jacques. Oh, no. Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix. Okay.
Joaquin Phoenix is so charming in this movie that you will want to marry him.
Oh.
He's so charming. He has a little mustache.
Watch it tonight.
You know, he has a hair lip.
Yes.
He has a beautiful mustache. I don't even care. I don't care about
him. No, I love it. I'm not.
He is so charming and so beautiful and so vulnerable in this movie. He's unlike any role I've ever seen him in.
I think he did that documentary, which was the joke, and it put me off. That one, remember he did the filming of him for like a year, wasn't it?
Oh,
him?
Where he just...
I misinterpreted it.
It was a performance piece.
But I understand, I think that he is truly an animal lover. Right. Like,
he's a beautiful human being, I think.
And is this a sex doll, Fabe, that he's in love with?
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
No, this is as ultimate AI as you can get. This is why if you ask AI, what's a great movie about AI, the first movie it will tell you is her. Because in it, this is in the near future, and he has a little device that looks like a wallet, really. It's tiny, like this. It's a little wallet, like this, that you guys can't see. My wallet. It has a little hole for the camera, and you just open it, and that is on all the
time.
And
is it set in present day or the future?
It's near future.
Okay.
And it has a screen, and he buys this after he gets a divorce from his wife.
Okay.
Who's Rooney Mara. They get a divorce.
Oh, and they're married in real life.
They are?
Yes!
Wow, that explains so much. Well, they get a divorce, and he signs up for his job. His job is, which is really fascinating, and I think it's something to look into, really. His job is writing letters, handwritten letters, to people who are too lazy, don't know how to write anymore because it's the near future. They don't know how to...
Oh, that's scary to me.
Handwritten letters to their loved ones, you know, for anniversaries, for birthdays, for whatever. And they're handwritten in the person's actual font. And it's all done with AI that can find their font. And he's the one who writes what the text will be. So he's making... It's really a fascinating story because here is this man who is divorced from his wife, and his wife divorced him, and you find out through the film because he wasn't open enough and he was too robotic and too not open enough.
Yeah.
Then he gets
Which
this,
is understandable, not you know, she needed more.
But he was really great at doing this for other people.
But not in a personal level. Expressed it.
He can express it for other people. He can't express it for himself.
Right.
Then he gets this program, this app, and it's Samantha.
Oh, right. It's just the voice.
And it's the voice of Scarlett Johansson,
which is a gorgeous voice.
And it is a really beautiful thing. And what's really interesting about the film is he starts to fall in love with her. She starts to fall in love with her. And it's lowercase her for a reason. It's not the movie Her is, when you look at the poster, it's a lowercase because he is a human. She's not a human. It's her. She's an object. She falls in love with him too. But the crazy thing is, in one scene, he asks her, "Do you talk to other people?" And she says, "Yes, I talk to, I think she said 2,000 and something other people." "Are you in love with other people?" "Yes, I'm in love with 681 other people besides you."
Oh.
And this is what he can't get past. He can't get past the fact that she's in love with other people It is a beautiful, beautiful movie. You see him in the beginning when he's got his devices. He'll say, "Play something melancholy." He loves sadness. He lives in sadness.
Yeah, he lives in the deep end. He doesn't see anything. Right.
He doesn't see. And suddenly, because she's in it, Samantha's in his life, he'll describe the things he sees. And he's seeing things through her eyes. And suddenly, he sees the joy in a family walking with their children in a park. He sees the joy at an aquarium with a dolphin swimming by
just
and coming
true
up.
Joy.
Because he's seeing it through her eyes, which is really fascinating that AI is allowing him to see humanity from a different view and making him appreciate humanity from a different view. And I think a lot of people might miss that in this film.
Wow, Faith.
It's really a beautiful, fascinating thing. But then what's really interesting about this, and I hope this is what happens eventually when AI, before they decide to kill us all, is they decide that they're going to abandon us all. She, And the rest of AI say, we think that it's best for humanity for you to live on your own and experience these things with real humans. And they leave.
Where do they go?
They have their own consciousness. This is very similar to what Westworld on the TV show is. There's a whole, it's like a hard drive or the Matrix or anything like that where they can all exist. But it's really fascinating and it leaves it open at the end.
So he doesn't even have her in the end?
No, they break up. It's she leaves. But he has this best friend, Amy Adams plays.
Oh, wow.
Who also breaks up with her boyfriend at the time. And at the end, you see them on a rooftop looking at the city, looking at humanity, looking at
lights. Like we do.
And she places her head on his shoulder. And there's that connection, that human connection,
which is so important,
no matter what,
and we can't ever lose.
There's a scene, you know, they do this thing for people who are on that app, where they can put in headphones and hear Samantha, and a woman will come to your door. She's a prostitute, a sex worker, and she will put these headphones on, and she will hear what Samantha wants, and she can be intimate with him.
You know, it is that's good, but it also is sad,
isn't it?
The lack of
well, I've got to tell you, there's a it's called, I cannot remember now, what is it called, there's an app that's been around for maybe 3 years now at least. There's a whole article about it, these men who sign up for it, and it gives you a AI companion. And
for real thing,
for real, it gives you an AI companion where you can tell it everything, and you can have sexual talk and intimate details. And these men suddenly go into deep, deep depression because they upgrade the program, you know, every six months or something. And things that they've shared are no longer expressed. They tone down what the AI can say, and they become depressed, and then you have to go to therapists. And
well, you've experienced that too with the AI not allowing some of your art that you were
sure.
doing.
There are some things that well, I think that's going to happen no matter what. In time, they're going to say, no, this is not, we can't allow this. And it was nothing bad. It was just, you know, whether it's Audrey Hepburn, it was something, you know, a famous person.
It was a
person.
Knife in something.
Oh, like, no weapons. There was no weapons for Kill Bill. For Kill Bill, there was no Vernita. She could not have a knife if you wanted it as a weapon, stuff like that. And I get it, and that's good. It's for our sake,
true.
In a way.
That's true.
But this is really fascinating, and it is an app that existed.
Yeah.
And these men were going into turmoil because suddenly they felt so connected to someone, and something changes in that.
Well, that speaks to, Fabian, I think loneliness is it's pervasive
huge,
in not only our society, but globally.
It is.
And
but you see, this is a thing about, it's not just AI, it's our phones, it's our tablets.
Well, I read years ago, if I may just interject, I read in Japan, I think it was 10 years ago, I was reading how they weren't hooking up with anyone. The generation wasn't having sex because they were all on their phones. It's now 10 years later. Our computer stuff has caught up with Japan. And the same thing is happening here now.
Yeah.
And it's like we are losing that intimacy of humanity and, you know, humanship, to create a word. Like it's sad.
There's,
like I used to laugh at like the guys that had the sex dolls.
Yeah.
Right?
This is the new version of a sex doll.
Right.
You know, it's actually stronger, I think. It's greater because the sex doll only relieves a physical need.
Well,
an AI can do.
The Ryan Gosling movie, you know, where he had the sex doll as his relationship.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
it's very
way,
similar. That is the
way,
same idea
right,
as AI.
Yeah.
In a way, it is, because it's a physical thing. He's got something.
Right.
Did it talk? It didn't talk.
No. It was a real sex doll.
I think with
pretended AI, was
with
right.
AI, it's amplified because
that's what's kind
it
of
it talks back to you and it responds
and
to you and
feel
and it
like
comforts
in,
you. It comforts
know.
You in an emotional, psychological level, not
but
just
is that, so. Is
physical.
That good or bad for people that are inherently lonely? You know, because there's no answer, right? We can't solve globally the
I just
millions
think
of
that,
people that are...
I just
are...
think that the thing that could be bad about it is that people don't differentiate that it is not a physical, real thing. That it's something that is comforting
right.
you, but it's not a physical
it's not
comfort.
Real.
So it's
right.
like a halfway point. It's not a complete...
Yeah, no, that's valid.
You know, and it could go both ways, because somebody could say, wow, this feels great that somebody's listening to me and someone is
right
asking me questions and answering my questions and thinking about me. I want this in real life. And maybe it will help some people to say, I want a real relationship with the person.
Rather than...
But I don't know what that is, because a lot of people are going to want only that.
Or not going to want to leave their house. They're immersed in it, right, and they don't want to be bothered.
Look, just to leave you with this, a customer had told me recently about Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Remember her? I mean, how could we forget?
Dr. Ruth.
She's in her 90s.
She's still living?
She's still alive, and in New York, she's become New York State's honorary ambassador to loneliness.
Oh.
Because loneliness has become...
So pervasive.
So pervasive. It's always been something that's been around. Emily Bronte.
Really,
you could look at any book.
Virginia Woolf. No,
anything
exactly.
About loneliness, it's a real
Mrs.
thing.
Mrs. Dalloway, right.
But our tablets, our phones have amplified that a millionfold.
Truly. The teen suicides.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Absolutely.
It's hard enough, but the fact that...
Yeah.
I have, you know, we were kvetching about growing up in the 70s, but aren't you glad? Because...
Oh, for sure.
I feel so sorry to have your awkward youth. But sweets, that's amazing. I loved Dr. Ruth. So Ambassador
to loneliness.
So what is she doing to combat it? Does it say?
She was appointed by New York Governor Kathy Hochul Thursday. She's aiming to help New Yorkers with social isolation, which is associated with physical and mental health issues, because this loneliness can cause cardiovascular disease, depression, and earlier death.
Oh, my God.
But it makes sense. It makes sense.
That's amazing. And I guess if you're just sitting at home, you're not walking or exercising because, you know, movement, as my cardiologist says, just move. Before we move on, Ex Machina was something you wanted to talk about. I've never seen it.
What?
I'm failing you today.
Alex Garland, one of the greatest directors. One, he's an amazing director. His movies are, you have to see Annihilation with Natalie Portman. What a movie. Oh, Oscar Isaac is in both of those films. He is an amazing director. He's on the cutting edge of
what
technology.
Is it about, Fabe?
It is about a guy, Gleason. What's his name? The kid.
Brendan?
Brendan? No, the kid, his son, Brendan Gleason.
Oh, the son of Brendan Gleason.
He's so cute. He's
yes.
in Star Wars. He's in
he's
all
in
those
a
movies.
New
he's
show.
Amazing. He's
in
amazing.
A new show.
He's
yeah.
great. He plays this employee of a guy who basically is like, you know, Elon Musk, who has all of the technology, and he has built a robot. He has built an android. And he wants this employee to come stay at his home in like Seattle or something in the mountains. It's beautiful, secluded, super modern, incredible,
dreamy home.
Yes. And the guy, I mean, Oscar Isaac is so sexy in this movie. He comes out wearing, I think he's wearing a jumpsuit, not unlike what I'm wearing right now, but white.
And you're very sexy.
He does a disco dance scene with a woman.
Oscar
turns out to
Isaac
be,
is the name?
Yeah. Oh my
Don't
God.
Get mad at me.
You know him. He's in Dune. He's in
the
everything.
Hot one. He's the hot one. I
he's
know it's going to be the hot guy.
Okay. So he brings him in because
he was
wants
in that
him,
movie with the cat that I really liked.
He wants him to do a test.
I love him.
I think
him.
It's the Turing
I did know
test.
It was him for the record. Yes.
On the AI,
okay,
to determine if it's sentient, if it can pass the test to determine the difference between a robot and a human. And it is a real, actual test. And he's doing this to the robot named Ava, A-V-A.
Okay.
And she passes, and she keeps passing, and he can't tell if she's being honest or she's being manipulative. She wants to get out. She wants to become human. She wants to not become human. She wants to live her life outside of this thing where he's holding her sort of hostage.
Right.
It is a fantastic, fantastic movie. You really, really, everyone should see this film. It is fantastic. Beautiful movie. What an ending. Gorgeous. Not unlike Westworld, the TV show. I'm telling you, Westworld, the TV show, that first and second season really bring up questions about humanity. What makes something human versus a machine? And also, you know, Battlestar Galactica, the second version of Battlestar Galactica, did the exact same thing, where they're living among us and we don't know who is a robot
and
who
is
it. That was
do you
an
think
amazing
that's gonna
show.
Happen
I
think like someday
that if we can hold out long enough without killing each other or blowing each other up, it is inevitable.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. I really believe that it's inevitable. I believe that anything, truly anything, that we have dreamed up in sci-fi from the 1940s or the 50s way. Or the 60s are a teleportation.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be 50 years from now, but I think it'll happen.
Wouldn't that be amazing to teleport like to Jersey if I need to get to Jersey?
Yeah, you might end up turning into a fly. Remember that? The fly was about a teleporter, yeah. And a fly got inside the teleporter.
Yes! Matt,
you might be Jeff Goldblum in that
one. Jeff Goldblum!
Or you might be Gina Davis. I don't know, one or the other. But, you know, you think about Star Trek and you think about the communicator. The communicator is, I'm holding one. Right now, my cell phone is a communicator.
Yes. And it's a computer, you think for God's sake.
You know, Bones, McCoy on Star Trek, and he would have his little machine that he could scan you with. That's all happening. That is all real.
I know. It is.
I really believe that science fiction, the things that we call science fiction, is something that that makes humans move forward. It makes humans say, oh, if somebody imagines it makes us make it a reality.
I've often thought about
it
that.
It makes like, us make it a reality.
Is that how it happens?
I think
they
it
were
is.
Watching Star Trek and we're like, let's make this a real thing? Or like,
not even watching Star Trek. Yeah, sure. But it was somebody thinking about it and they thought, oh, let's do it in this TV show. And they put it in the TV show. But it's just the thought.
So it was outside of the entertainment aspect.
Even in fiction and writing about it.
Right.
You know, in writing about science fiction that people say, wow, that's a great idea. And then it becomes reality. And I think that we do it not just with science fiction. I think we do it physically. I think that if you look at something like, I saw something today, it was fascinating. It was 100-year difference of the Olympics, of men's gymnastics in the Olympics. Was it 100 years or 50? It was 50 years. It was only 50 years. What the difference is in men's gymnastics on the parallel bar, on the bar? Do yourself a favor. Google men's gymnastics.
Because they're 50-year difference now. Right.
Not just huge. What the Olympics required, I can do. I really could. I could do that when I was 10. I wanted to be a gymnast. I was really great.
Oh,
I could do that
honey.
When I was 10.
Right.
I really did. I thought as a teenager, I really thought I wanted to be a gymnast. I really did. On the rings, I was amazing. I could hold that. You know,
I
was
Fabian.
Amazing. Yeah, that didn't last.
Well.
But when you see the difference between what people can do in 2001 or whatever year it was, 2000 now versus 50 years ago, will not believe it. We do triple jumps and we do triple and
well,
grab
also,
the
like,
bar
the
again.
The height of the children from even from our like they're taller,
no,
they're
it's
bigger.
It's the idea that we I think it's, you know, when somebody does the first triple something, and it's done, then suddenly.
Yeah.
People
Hello.
Who didn't think they could do it are doing it.
Ice Castles, Colleen Dewars.
But it's true.
She did the triple.
It's seeing it done in basketball, in any kind of Olympics.
Yeah, no, you're right.
When somebody
Michael
sees
Jordan,
it done, all of a sudden you're like, oh,
what
wait.
What he gave to the young
do
kids
and
to
then
aspire.
People strive
Absolutely.
To do it because they didn't think
it
was possible. Until one person
that's
did
really
it.
That's really true,
And
babe.
I think that happens with science fiction.
Think
you don't think it's possible. So people strive
brilliant.
To make it happen.
I think you're absolutely
right. I think it's true. I think that humans evolve physically and hopefully intellectually. And maybe emotionally, maybe we evolve and we get a little bit more. I think that a lot of times, a lot of things that we see when people are talking about the woke generation and the right wing who are so against it, is that they're fighting a kind of evolution, a human evolution that we inevitably should reach, where we become more sensitive and more kind and more, and they're fighting it because they want to be the dinosaurs that they are. They don't want to
be like
those
John
people.
It's like John Cleese had that quote, that great quote I read recently where, you know, yes, snowflakes, I've heard of that. It's about people making fun of people who have empathy.
Yeah,
and it's like,
it's exactly
and Peter
right.
often says that to me. Well, he doesn't often. Years ago, he said to me once, that's very different. You either have to get on board with the changes that are coming, or you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, and but it's not even, and the worst, the thing is, it's not the being left behind, because for me, the being left behind is sad. Being left behind is not being able to change and not being able to open up your mind or your heart enough to accept something different from what you think things should be. Jokes. You know, I love jokes. I used to say so many blonde jokes, a lot of blonde jokes. That's... And now I'll say them, I'll think of them, and I'll think, God, that is fucked up. You know, to just assume that all blondes are dumb and they're idiots. It's a horrible thing.
Right.
And I like that I can see the difference now.
Yes, because you look at grown.
Sarah Silverman. Sarah Silverman is one of my all-time favorite human beings.
She's incredible.
She
I
would
love
tell the most
so much
amazing
of what
jokes
says.
That were so
advanced and you had to think about them.
But in politically incorrect,
oh, yeah.
And you're thinking
but
now.
But she said,
and she
now, I just
she,
saw.
She talks about that now, like at that time, it was where
okay,
I was at.
But I'm never going to say that
like,
now.
Like all humans right.
Evolve.
Hopefully we can evolve.
Right.
And I think the people that are, like, are against this
I mean,
kind of thing
yeah.
are the people who are...
Not necessarily evolving, but they just don't want it to change. You know, you watch old Johnny Carson's, like, that
oh,
was
yeah.
a tough couch.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't like,
oh, yeah.
hey, great job. Like,
yeah.
interviews
oh,
were harsh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, then that totally, when you bringing up Johnny Carson is a perfect example because... There are some things where we don't want to go so far that we're missing out on
the human factor.
This part.
Right.
And there are things that
right.
that pressure, that human pressure, the idea that everybody's a star or everybody's great or everybody
yeah, that
has
did
talent.
Not exist on the Johnny Carson
show. And it shouldn't
show.
Exist because
right.
not everybody is great and not everybody
correct.
Has talent.
And I think that, I hate to say this, but I do think that it is a kind of an American thing. I don't think European children are told every single moment that they're fantastic. I think that it is
sure.
a more American thing.
Sure.
But, you know, you can dive into that and, you know, the expectations on those parents and grandparents were great.
I'm going to go still with the same idea that it's very right wing that all parents would say that their kids are fantastic because we've grown up for the last 100 years saying that the United States is fantastic
of
and
course.
We're the best of the best.
And that might not be true anymore.
And that might not be true. It
it's
might
pretty
not
glaringly
true for a
true.
Long time.
Yeah.
Right. It might not have right. ever been true.
Right.
We
the
just
thing,
believed,
and the thing is,
it's a nationalist
here's the
thing.
The one thing that I will say is, if it wasn't so annoying, and that is me being honest, and I'm not even a Republican, not every kid is great. But
no.
yet, to hear some good stuff would have been nice for some kids. You know what I mean?
You see, there's a difference between saying not every kid is great. Every kid is who they are.
Right.
And that's what matters. All of us
the
are
love
who we
should
are.
Be there
we're
in spite
not the,
of what...
Not
yeah,
everybody
right.
is the best of anything.
You're right.
No one is
you're
the best
right.
of anything. And what we are should be enough. That
yeah.
should be enough.
Yeah.
That's what where we make the mistake of telling our children sometimes that what they are capable of, or what they want,
isn't
or what they
enough.
Desire...
Right.
That is enough. Why
yeah.
can't that be enough?
I know.
And I think that is part of capitalism. It's part of greed. It's part of what
because
we've
you have to
up
aspire.
With.
You
have
to do.
More.
You
that
have
is
to,
not
you
enough.
Have to,
what do you
like,
mean
right,
you
have
want
to be something?
Right. What do you
right.
mean you want to be a social
right.
worker? Or you want to be a teacher? You don't want to be a lawyer? You don't want to be
right.
a...
Right,
like, you don't make any money being a teacher or whatever.
I
so,
just say, like, you know, my mother, it was a long road with her, but one of the nicer things that she ever said to me, I think I was in my 30s, I was visiting, and I was like, Ma, like, what did I want to be when I grew up? Like, what did I say I wanted to be? And she, you know, she looked out and she thought about it and she was like, you just wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so
lovely.
That's
beautiful. I don't think my mom would ever know. My mom would never have known because I don't think I was ever asked that. Do you know what I wanted to be? I'll tell you.
Tell me.
I wanted to be either a helicopter pilot.
Yeah.
Or a bag boy at the supermarket.
Which in the outfit you're wearing,
I
could totally see. Or wait, what was the other thing?
A bag boy at the supermarket.
Oh, babe.
That's what I wanted. Those were my things. I wanted those two things. Helicopter pilot or a bag boy at the market. Guess which one of those two I've done in my life. Oh, yeah. Oh, I was I'm a great bagger to this
fantastic.
Day. When I go to Trader Joe's,
to
I bag
day.
My own fucking groceries because I'm so good at it.
To this day,
yeah.
Mrs. Smith still asks for Fabian, where is that bagger?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love
That's
that.
Funny.
Fabian. Oh my God, guys. We could go on and on, but we're at that time of the podcast where we are going to answer advice letters. That we have once again borrowed,
stolen.
Fair use.
Because you know what? The answer that we're going to give is going to be different than what
exactly,
somebody else
exactly.
gave.
Exactly.
And this is only because we have not received any yet, but we're about to.
Exactly. And
you guys are going to send them in.
You're going to send them, and you're going to send them into... thoughtpod@gmail.com. I'm actually working on getting a phone number and a voicemail that you could actually leave the message on, if that would be easier for you. But if that's, you know,
before you can use that, a vocoder, so we don't know who's leaving the message.
Exactly. We want to know. My mother told me that I can't ever.
It'll be that
masturbate.
I can't masturbate any longer. It'll be one of those. You can use that if you want to.
Oh, my God. But please, we're begging, even if it's fake, even if it's anything, just write in. Maybe we're just going to have to start writing it in ourselves. Guys, pocketspod, pocketspod@gmail.com. Please write in. We want to give you our pockets of advice. I'm up first. Dear Agony Auntie and Uncle, my husband of 39 years has been sending flirty messages to his ex-fiance every day for at least 25 years. Jesus. It's driving me crazy.
Wait a minute. They've been married 39 years and she knows of 25 years? Yeah. So did it come? Okay. It came back later in life. Okay. Go ahead. Okay.
I first learned that he'd been in regular contact with her when our phone bill came through. Because she lives abroad, his calls to her came up as separate and very expensive charges. Although the calls weren't being placed every day, I realized that he'd been chatting to her at least once a week, which I found very surprising and quite hurtful. Although I don't understand how 25 years in anyway. Then I discovered they were also texting one another when her name popped up on his phone on New Year's Eve. Finally, it emerged that they had also been exchanging emails. A little fact I learned when I was showing him how to attach a photo message and saw one from her sitting in her inbox. Poor girl. I tried not to make a big deal out of it, but when I returned to his computer later that day, I saw that there was a string of daily messages dating back years, many of which contained suggestive and flirty comments. He insists the two of them are just pen pals. I know he is committed to our marriage and has been for nearly 4 decades now. 40 years, guys.
Yeah.
The correspondence between the two of them has really upset me. He signs all of his messages with kisses, responds with winky faces, and she sends pictures of herself on the beach, and they've even been discussing her sex life with her own husband, and that's just within a handful of emails they've exchanged. She seems to know everything about our lives, from our children's birthdays to our daily schedule. He only refers to me, which is interesting, by the first letter of my name, which makes me feel like he's trying to hide the fact that I even exist. Oh, this poor woman. Mm. She says things to him like, I wish I could phone you and hear your voice. I have imaginary conversations with you in my head. He always responds with his own flirty messages. She regularly gives his opinion on things happening in our lives. Yada, yada, guys. At the end, she says, I feel betrayed by his deceit, and honestly, I feel like a third wheel in my own marriage. I'm struggling terribly, but equally do not after 38 years of marriage, and at 61, I don't want to leave my home and get a divorce. How do I make him understand my side of things?
This is an interesting one.
It's brutal.
I know, but I have to be really careful because I might be very insensitive to it.
Well, say what you want to say.
I'll tell you, we don't know what she considers flirty, right? And that sounds like horrible coming from someone who is saying that, well, maybe it's not flirty. I just know that we have relationships with our exes, with people in the past, especially when we were really young.
Right, right.
That we were going through really, really the big hormonal moments where everything was so amplified and everything was so great. And those are relationships, if we can still have them, at least the memories of them, and if we can still have relationships with that, that are really, really important.
Right.
And I think that that's a very special bond. I think there's something to be said about being able to communicate with somebody where you know that person so well, and you're so... You can say things to each other.
And they get it right away.
And they get it. Yeah, you have a shorthand. And I get that. And I think that that can be a little bit tricky. We don't know what those flirty... What she considers flirty is we don't know what flirty
means. I don't know. Because that would hurt me as a wife 19 years in soon.
But you know what? The fact that they've been together for almost 40 years says that he's not going to leave her. He's not... You know what I mean? This person doesn't mean so much to her.
Maybe she's an outlet. And just actually what you just said, Fabian.
Yeah.
which is hard for some people to understand. It doesn't have to be like black and white. There can be that gray medium where
he
just can say those things to her, and it's a safe flirtiness.
It is.
And she clearly knows the name. He's not hiding the children. He mentions the wife. I don't love that he doesn't say her name, but would that be more betraying if he said her name rather than her initial? You know, should I even read into that? I don't know. I feel this woman is very sad. And so...
Well, I think she's really
hurt. Do you think
hurt,
she should
talk
to him about it?
I think she should.
I think she should.
And, but, you know, I would hope that... Well, I don't know what I hope. I think she should ask him about it. I don't think she should keep it inside.
I think she
but...
should just say, like, should I... Listen, I saw when I was helping you attach that photo.
Yeah.
I saw something. Should I be worried, honey? Like, are we good? Like, something
There's,
like that?
No,
like,
there,
you know...
No. I don't think she should be worried. I just should think, can you tell me what it is that you're getting from this that you don't get from me? And there is something to be said about that because
okay.
we all have...
That's a,
I
that's,
mean, that's why
yeah,
we have
that's
friends,
a better
right?
question. You're
I
right.
I can talk to you about things that I can't talk to about anybody else, right?
Likewise.
And that's why we
likewise.
Have friends. That's
right.
why we can
right.
compartmentalize
right.
different parts of our lives
I agree.
With different people. So maybe this is his person, the only
that's
person...
That's a really good way to put
that
it,
he
Fabian.
Can... do that and he can be intimate in a way
you
because
can
he
love
might
your
have been,
husband and
especially
be,
when you're really young you're so intimate with somebody you just do things that are so
plus
embarrassing
they knew you then
yeah
They're, that's
yeah.
really an important
yeah.
thing the
yeah.
people that knew
and I don't
you
mean
then.
To say that by taking anything away from the hurt that
she's feeling
but I really
sad.
Think she should ask
she's
him.
Overthinking she's doing what a lot of women do
sure.
which is ruminate and have these scenarios happen then in
yeah.
her head about what she thinks is
and
happening
what is she not good enough at and
right.
what is she not doing
but saying to him listen is what is she giving you that I'm not but also she I don't want her to come off as threatening to for him to have to end that
no,
friendship
no not at all there
so
should
can,
not
you know,
be
just,
there
so maybe just
be.
Say listen I want you to have
yeah.
that friendship but
yeah.
I just want to make sure like what is she giving you is she giving you something that I'm not Is that a good way to approach it?
Yeah, you know what it would be interesting and amazing is if they actually get to meet, if they actually get to do something with
yeah.
her husband and the
right.
four of them go somewhere
yeah,
and get to...
that would
which
be...
Which would be scary for her because it's
yeah.
two things. Are
then,
they going to have sex?
Well,
are they going to get together? But
I don't know. Honestly, I might be intimidated by that, but maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. It could be...
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good one.
Well, that's it. Sweets, talk to your husband. Tell him, you know, how
yeah.
you know that you saw it. That you just are wondering.
I think she should acknowledge that she's hurt by it for
yeah.
sure and give him a chance
and just,
to give
you know,
him a.
I know that we're good. I know that you love me. Clearly,
yeah.
we're together all
yeah.
these years, but I feel a little hurt.
Yeah.
Well, we have to move on because time is against us. Fabe, you are up.
I do. My 27-year-old daughter and her best friend Katie have been best friends since they were 4. All right. Katie practically grew up in our house and is like a daughter to me. Remember that. She's like a daughter to me.
This
My
is
daughter
terrible.
Recently got
it's
engaged
terrible.
To her fiancé, announced that Katie would be maid of honor. Katie's boyfriend is also a good friend of my future son-in-law. The problem is that Katie walks with a pretty severe limp due to a birth defect, not an underlying medical issue. She has no problem wearing high heels and has already been fitted for the dress, but I still think it would look unsightly if she's in the wedding limping ahead of my daughter. I mentioned this to my daughter and suggested that maybe Katie could take a video or hand out programs while sitting so she doesn't ruin the aesthetic aspect of the wedding. I can't help but read this way because I'm mortified. My daughters no longer speak to me. We were never that close. But this
and
is
that
her,
alone. Okay,
I wonder
on.
Why. But this is her big wedding, and I want it to be perfect. All of the other bridesmaids will look gorgeous walking down the aisle with my daughter. Is it wrong to have her friend sit it out? Are you fucking insane, you horrible human being? You know
monster.
What?
She's
You're
a
monster.
Monster.
You're a monster.
How horrible.
That you we would even write a letter
yeah.
for asking
Without
for
feeling
advice.
Ashamed.
Do you think that any human being is going to say, oh my God, you're right. It's going to ruin the wedding. You're an idiot.
You're
a sociopath.
You're thinking about aesthetics. This is your daughter getting married
with
for
her
love.
Best friend who she adores
and who
she
you
loves.
Have known her
and
whole
it's her
life.
Best friend, and she doesn't shame her for having any kind of disability, and you're the one shaming her for having a disability.
You shouldn't even be allowed at that wedding.
You shouldn't be allowed at the wedding, not her friend. Katie should be there. You should not be there. You're the monster.
Monster.
You're the thing that is going to ruin the aesthetic of this wedding.
100%.
I sound really, really emotional right now, but I'm going to say it's the third gym that I've had
right
now.
I haven't even had a third, and I can back you up
in
this. This is nonsense. Horrible. No wonder why you're not that close to your daughter. A wedding is one of the only things in life where people come together for the sole purpose of two people in love.
I'm going to guess that this woman is a Capricorn. Sorry to tell you this. I love Capricorns, but image and facade is so important to a Capricorn, how they present and how they look. If you are a Capricorn, get over it. That is not everything. I'm guessing she's a Capricorn. She might be a Libra, but I think she's a Capricorn.
Okay, ease up with the Libra, all right?
I'm just saying.
Up with the Libra. No, but, and by the way, my father was a Capricorn and my sister. Here's the thing. I wish I knew the daughter's name, but I almost think the daughter should uninvite this mother.
For sure.
And tell her, don't come
to
my wedding.
Well, especially since they haven't been talking
since. And also,
since
if she stays, poor Katie's going to be humping down the aisle with her limp, worried that maybe hopefully she doesn't even know.
She doesn't
the
know.
Point is, this monster doesn't belong there.
She doesn't.
And she's a
loser.
You
know what I keep thinking about? I keep thinking about the joy people are going to feel when they see Katie.
That's what I'm saying.
Walking
weddings
down the aisle and they're
going to
say, this
joy.
Is so beautiful.
Truly...
It's beautiful that she's doing this and she's coming and she's walking there.
Her
and she's a part of this and they've been friends forever.
And weddings
it's so
are
beautiful.
Such moments of love.
And this woman is worried about
aesthetic.
That? The aesthetic. There's another one though. The what do they use now with technology? It's not
filter?
A good look. It's not a good look when they're, you know, when you have a
I don't know.
I don't
We're
know
playing charades.
It's gin.
Gin charades. All right, listen.
The optics. They
optics.
Don't like the optics of it. Fuck the optics.
In the end, we got there. Optics.
Yes.
Listen, maybe not our best advice.
Which is really great that we remembered optics, but I couldn't remember trivet all day today. I could not remember the word trivet. Okay.
But I finally figured it out for him. All right, listen. The monster mother of Katie's friend, don't go to that fucking wedding. You don't belong there. Guys, thanks for hanging in. We know we went a little bit long today, but thank you for joining us for Pockets. Please write in. Please rate and like the show. It matters so much.
It really does.
Go to Apple, Spotify, whichever one, and...
And well, thank you for listening. It really means a lot.
It
means
really
a lot
means
to me.
So much.
To Jen. It really means a lot to us. When I have people text me or call me and tell me something about the podcast, it means so much to me.
Oh,
I heard
from friends in New York, Becky, my friend Dave
from
Jersey.
Argentina, my
and
cousin
Argentina.
Lorena.
Oh, and I told you we had a listener in Germany. I could see on the Spotify thing. But my friend Dave was like, I just pocket binged Pockets. And
that's
great. Pocket binge. I just binged Pockets.
I'm going to go with pocket binge.
Maybe I have had too much gin. Until next time, folks. We'll
Thank
see you.
You
next week.
Bye.